Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the FY19 annual results conference call of HDFC Life. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Vibha Padalkar, MD and CEO. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the discussion on our results for the year ended March 31st, 2019. Our results, including the investor presentation, press release, and regulatory disclosures, are already available on our website as well as that of the stock exchanges. I have with me Suresh Badami, Executive Director, Niraj Shah, CFO, Srinivasan Parthasarathy, our appointed actuary, and Kunal Jain from Investor Relations. I will spend the next few minutes running through the key highlights of our FY19 results and would be happy to take questions post that. Starting with an update on business performance. This year, we drove an increase in the contribution of our agency and direct channels, continued to strengthen our partnership network, readily ramped up our protection business, and forayed into annuities in a meaningful manner while embracing open architecture in bancassurance. We delivered strong performance across all key metrics, namely top line, new business margins, embedded value operating profits, and profit after tax. On total new business received premium, we continued to maintain our number one ranking in the private sector with a market share of  20.7%, up from 19.1% for FY18, with a strong year-on-year growth of 32%. During the year, we stepped up our focus on the three tenets of protection, namely mortality, morbidity, and longevity. As a result, term protection APE increased from 624 crores in FY18 to 1045 crores in FY19, recording a robust growth of  67%. Contribution of term protection increased from 5.1% to 6.7% based on individual APE and from 25.9% to 27% based on new business premiums. This resulted in the new business sum assured increasing by 28% to rupees 6.1 lakh crores from rupees 4.7 lakh crores last year. Contribution of annuity business has increased from 2.2% to 5% on individual APE and from 9.4% to 17% on new business premiums basis, recording a year-on-year growth of 144%. We ended the year with industry-leading new business margins of 24.6% on the back of NBM of 25.6% in quarter 4 FY19. Our operating return on EV remained strong at 20.1%. Our profit after tax grew a solid 15% to rupees 1277 crores, resulting in an ROE of 24.6%. Moving on to channel performance. Our number of partnerships as of March 31, 2019 was in excess of 250 and included 39 new ecosystem partners. Our bancassurance channel contributed 64% to our individual APE. Our bancassurance partnerships other than HDFC Bank showed a robust YOY growth of over 30%. As regards HDFC Bank, while we had a muted year on new business growth, we remain focused on offering the best value proposition to the bank and its customers through multiple initiatives across product solutions, resourcing and skill building, ease of transacting, and exploring newer avenues of business. We are also delighted to have onboarded United Bank of India as a partner bank this quarter. In line with our stated objective of diversifying our distribution, the share of our proprietary channels comprising our agency and direct channels has increased from 25% to 32% of individual APE and accounts for 78% of our individual protection business. Our agency channel grew at a healthy rate of 25% for the year with a 74% increase in absolute value of new business. We added over 28,500 new agents during the year. Our flagship program, Agency Life, has grown by leaps and bounds, resulting in a 30% increase in sales productivity of participating agents. Our direct channel, which includes the online platform, grew by 46% year-on-year in FY19. We have been able to expand the online segment beyond protection and are now able to sell investment plans to the online customer. Our ability to cross-sell protection products with such investment plans has helped maintain our channel profitability whilst driving growth. We continue to invest in digital marketing to drive online organic traffic to our website and our mobile app. Marketing technology tools are integrated with our platforms used to run customized nudge campaigns. Moving on to product performance. Product innovation continues to be one of HDFC Life's key differentiators with the intent of maintaining a customer-centric, balanced and profitable product suite. Our newly launched savings product, Sanchay Plus, has been received with great enthusiasm across various customer segments. It has clocked Rs. 250 crores premium in 3 weeks since launch and has become one of our top-selling products. Our revamped online ULIP offering, Click to Wealth, which was launched in Q4, has not only made the customer value proposition attractive in the vanilla investment segment, but has helped us offer the child and retirement propositions in the online space. Our Credit Protect business reflected a strong growth of 36% for the year, despite testing times witnessed by some of our lending partners. We remain diversified across our partners, with HDFC Group contributing 28% and no single partnership ex-HDFC Group contributing more than 10% to our Credit Protect business in FY19. Further, our business is also well diversified, with housing and LAP contributing 37%, microfinance contributing 29%, and other lines of business such as personal lending, vehicle and tractor finance, amongst others, contributing to the balance. In order to address the financial risks emanating out of the diverse array of our product offerings, we have a robust risk management framework in place. This includes natural hedges within our lines of business, prudent product design and mix monitoring, complementary liability profiles, and use of hedging instruments as a residual strategy. This has resulted in low sensitivity of EV and VNB to change in interest rates. Moving on to technology and operations being key differentiators. As an industry first, we have built a hyper-personalized sales incentive app. This app is designed to nudge individual sales personnel to execute specific tasks and is incentivized based on the closure of the set tasks. It is an AI engine running at the back end with an algorithm allocating the tasks on real-time basis. We have continued to maintain our focus on further simplifying customer journeys. To this end, we have leveraged analytics in our underwriting processes to provide pre-approved sum assured or PASA to customers. We are in the process of launching the same with a couple of our large partners. The use of advanced analytics has helped us improve our claims processing, and we have progressed to settle 99% of all our claims in terms of number of policies. Our persistency continues to be stable, with our overall 13-month persistency ratio, including group, at 87% and 84% for individual business. Our 61st-month persistency has inched up to 52%, and as mentioned to you earlier, is showing an improving trend as the effect of an improved 49th-month persistency flows in. A quick update on our two wholly owned subsidiaries. Our pension subsidiary remains the number one privately owned pension fund manager in India in terms of assets under management, as also the fastest growing pension fund manager under the NPS architecture. Its AUM as on March 31, 2019 was Rs. 5165 crores, which is a growth of 102% over the previous year. Its market share amongst all private pension fund managers grew from 21.4% in March 18 to 26.7% in March 19. The subsidiary was formed with a strategic rationale of being a feeder to our annuity business, and we remain enthused about the strong potential of this business. Effective 1st of April 2019, central government employees have been allowed to choose amongst private-owned pension fund managers, and hence this has opened up a big opportunity for HDFC Pension. Additionally, HDFC Pension also received a license to operate as a point of presence, with operations having commenced in quarter four. Our other subsidiary, HDFC International Life and Re, has successfully completed 3 financial years of operations and currently offers reinsurance capacity in UAE, Oman, Bahrain, Jordan and Egypt. The company doubled its turnover for the year, clocking $4.3 million and also declared its maiden net profit in FY19. It is focused on creating stable and diversified revenue lines in the geographies mentioned. During the year, there was also a capital infusion of rupees 116 crores into the subsidiary. A quick recap of our well-rounded financial performance in FY19. Starting with premiums, our total new business has shown robust growth of 32%. We continue to maintain industry-leading new business margin amongst listed players. Our new business margin in FY19 was 24.6% versus 23.2% last year. Embedded value grew from rupees 15216 crores last year to rupees 18301 crores as on March 31, 2019 with robust operating return on embedded value of 20.1%. The annualized return on equity was a healthy 24.6%. Our profit after tax for FY19 was rupees 1277 crores, clocking a growth of 15% with nearly 70% of profits being generated by our core insurance business. Our AUM was in excess of rupees 1.25 lakh crores as on 31st March, reflecting a growth of 18%. To conclude, we are pleased to have closed yet another year with a strong performance across all key metrics, providing the best value proposition to our customers, partners and shareholders. The detailed disclosure on our results is available in our investor presentation. In the end, I would like to thank all of you for your continued support of our company. We are happy to take questions now.
Sure, thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask questions, please press star and one. The first question is from the line of Hitesh Gulati from Haitong Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for giving me an opportunity and congratulations on a good set of numbers. I have a couple of questions. Firstly, ma'am, on the EV walk, we have mentioned only operating variances this time. So does that include operating assumption changes or should we assume assumption changes are nil for this year?
Yes, this includes operating assumption changes.
Okay. And the breakup of operating variances in persistency and mortality, like is this going to be unit in persistency, mortality and expenses? So those are the three line items. We're not breaking them up, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, they're all very close to our assumptions and small amounts, but all are positive.
Okay. And how has the maintenance OPEX experience for us been? Because there's been some impact on acquisition costs, but on maintenance OPEX, how has the experience been throughout the year?
It has always been positive for the last 10 years.
Okay, thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. And a couple of questions. Firstly, if you can give some color on the composition of new business strain. Because if I look over 9 months, this number was close to 10.8 billion strain. And then now in full year, it has increased to 16.5 billion. So there's a big 60% increase over last year. So what is causing this? Is it to do more with annuity business or is like the protection being a big driver?
Yeah, so it is. So if you look at our product mix, that is really the shift has been towards both selling, exactly like you said, both annuity and term business, and that is really causing that in terms of strain. It would be very profitable down the line. A lot of it is single premium, so again, there's no persistency risk in that. And as you can see, I think we're the only company that gives that kind of split of back book and new business strain. You'll see that for the last several years, this has been a very healthy back book generation. In fact, our back book grew by 33% YOY.
Okay. And secondly, some color, if you can give on the bank assurance business mix, like that piece is moderating in terms of business?
Yeah, so like I had mentioned in my opening remarks, our bancassurance ex-HDFC Bank grew by over 30%, and we continue to tie up with new partners. During the year, we tied up with 95 relationships, both on bancassurance and on the other modes of distribution. And we continue to grow as they grow. With HDFC Bank, like I mentioned, this was a year wherein they embraced open architecture, and we remain very focused on how to offer the best value proposition to them as a distributor.
So with HDFC Bank, do you expect this mix to moderate further, or will this like stabilize?
We expect to be able to show a smooth upward growth from here on overall bancassurance.
Okay, and lastly on margins. Now margins for Q4 seems to be particularly very strong.
Yeah.
So what is the trajectory we can expect going forward on this line?
Again, a smooth upward curve because on margins as well, like I mentioned, this kind of growth that you see has been a very steady growth right from when you look at 3-4 years ago. We have been adding about 80 bips to about 100 odd bips YOY. And this is on the back of a very finely managed combination of what we sell through which channel, what is the tenure. So it is quite a complex equation in terms of how we manage the product mix. And also on the back of product innovation, and I called out a couple of products in my opening remarks, it's with a view to really offering products that don't exist today and opening up a particular sector.
Okay. Thanks so much, ma'am.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nilesh Jain from Investec.
Thanks for the opportunity. Three questions. Firstly, you spoke about natural hedges in your portfolio. If you can just elaborate on that and give some examples of that.
Sorry, there's too much of background noise.
Hello, is this better now?
Yeah, it's better.
Yeah. So first question is on, you spoke about natural hedges in your portfolio. Can you give some example and can you elaborate on that?
Frankly, some of it is secret sauce. So I think just speaking a little bit more broadly, what happens when you build a non-monoline insurance company like ours has been, wherein we have been right from, I think the last 5-6 years, we've had several different kinds of products as against only unit linked or participating products. And so that allows us to be able to use one particular product liability and asset profile to be a natural hedge versus some other liability and asset profile. And that's really what I'm referring to. So, a protection versus longevity is a very obvious one in terms of being complementary. So it's really those sorts of things.
Sure. So protection versus longevity is pretty obvious, but on the interest rate front, so because I noticed that on the HDFC Life Sanchay Plus, you are offering quite...
Hello? I think it's dropped off.
How are you able to sustain that?
So I think you just dropped off, but paraphrase your question. You're saying how are we doing risk management on Sanchay Plus?
Yes.
So without going into the specifics, Sanchay Plus is a fairly long duration liability, and you have to just identify other liability profiles in the business elsewhere which are shorter duration and just match the duration so that we are getting a natural hedge from one profile to another. So that's the way we manage the risk management on Sanchay Plus.
In fact, the idea of a product like Sanchay Plus came because we had this kind of profile. So this is something that we have been working on to build these different liability profiles for quite some time.
Sure. And lastly, can you share the VNB mix in terms of protection, annuity and savings if possible?
So directionally is what I can say. Again, reason for not being able to disclose this because it's a very, a complex grid. It is what you sell through which channel and what tenure. So it's almost a three-dimensional output. But directionally, term still remains, term and pure protection just still remains right up there, followed by various kinds of non-par products followed by participating, and last is unit linked.
In terms of VNB mix also, that will be the share.
Yes. Yeah.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prakash Kapadia from Anived Portfolio Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. You know, if I look at the AP growth, second half has seen a muted AP growth. So if you could, you know, give us some sense, you did mention about some of the open architecture related slowdown. So was there some base effect, anything else? Because, you know, first half we were growing pretty well, and then, you know, if I split the AP, second half has seen a low single digit growth. So what is it which has, you know, affected us in the second half?
So in the second half there was a base impact. So second half of last year we had grown versus 1 year before that we had grown very robust. Also, if we were to take away the just the HDFC Bank muted growth that I mentioned earlier, all the other channels have grown, and this is agency, our online channel and direct have grown anywhere between a 25% growth to a 46% growth. So so these are the two big ticket reasons for that.
You did mention about, you know, online ULIP, I think Classic One is the name. So if you could give us some sense, is online ULIP a big opportunity? How much is the cost differentiator? Is that going to be a focus area?
Yeah. So online ULIP was, and going back in time when we had our Click 2 series and Click 2 Invest, even before Click 2 Wealth, that was with a view to having a very ease of onboarding and a product with you know, self buy if you like, and hence we were able to give a price differential of about 5%, and so it does make sense, especially wealth accumulation over the next several years does make sense and does add a fair bit to your assets under management. So yes, I think what we're beginning to do, and that's where I think has been a watershed year for us this year, is that we have started focusing on selling, apart from protection, we're also selling investment products through our online channel. And on the back of those investment products, we're able to also sell combination of term or upsell term and other slightly higher margin products. And we are very confident that down the line we should also be able to sell non-par savings products through online as the buyer becomes more aware and is able to deal with slightly more complex aspects of the product. And that's really the progression that we see in this online space.
And this would be specifically to, you know, subset of customers which are savvy or, you know, a certain you know, profile of the customers where we would push it through the digital channel also?
Yeah, so these are people who are very, so this is, in terms of if you were to figure out their digital age, which is different from the age of that particular individual, and that, you know, there is a definition of the digital age as to how many transactions has he been doing and for how long. Yes, the digital age would have been quite advanced for him to be able to buy a savings product through online. But having said that, we do believe that there is a place under the sun for agency channel, for broker channel, because different people, and of course bank assurance, because different people will have their affinity groups and also their trust groups. So they will buy, they might find out or try and explore as to what's available online, but ultimately end up buying through some kind of an offline mode or require some element of hand-holding. So we need to be able to offer all kinds of experience in the buying journey.
Sure, that is helpful. And what would be the number of employees as on FY19?
It's about 19,500, close to that.
And given, you know, the second half base coming into play this year, so on a going forward basis, we should expect a much higher AP growth for FY20?
All things being equal, yes.
Okay. Thank you. All the best. I'll
Thank
come back if I have
Thank
questions.
Thank you very much. Before we take the next question, We'd like to inform participants that in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we request you to rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of M.W. Kim from J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much for this opportunity. I have two questions. The number one question is about your underwriting profit breakdown. So when we actually look at the overall the back book surplus movement, for last 2 years, the growth was very strong. So may I ask that what is the major driver and how we should think about the future cash generation on your back book? Because the overall the compared to the new business strain, so the surplus is super. So it seems that you are the more the set the financing on your the back book. So I want to know the more color on that. And then my second question is about your future the capital management. Based on my observation, overall the non-par the sales growth seems growing and solvency ratio seems to decline. So if we actually think about the current product mix and then moving to the next 3 years timeline, it seems that the solvency ratio probably down a bit more. So what if the company's overall the thinking about the solvency ratio management for next 3 years? Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, and very valid questions. So on the first one on back book, the reason for this kind of a growth that you see and robust growth on back book, and we've grown 33% in this year over last year, is because of a couple of reasons. It is first one is on what we sold back in time and what is unwinding, if you like, or being realized as profits. We had a phenomenal journey in the Credit Protect business, and we identified this opportunity about 4 or 5 years ago. And the growth there has been close to 80-90% YOY. And because of the way we reserve, and we have been also conservatively reserving for the Credit Protect business because we were early movers in that space. So as that business matures, the back book generation of the profits from the Credit Protect business has been strong. Also on keeping a lid on our unit link business has helped rather than going all the way up to 75 or 85% of unit link products. We have been diversifying very steadily as the numbers also show on our other lines, so say our non-par business as well. And there too, even on our single premium as our reserving has been conservative, over the period the unwind of profits has been coming through. Third aspect is on persistence itself. We continue with, like I mentioned, with 87% persistency, and with our 61st month persistency also trending upwards, just shows that the unwind is also happening as a result of maintaining the policies on our books. So it's a combination of all these aspects. As far as the second point is concerned on solvency, the numbers that you see in terms of profit generation is as close to cash as one can have it, because in India there is no DAC or DOF. So what you see is just take out some of the non-cash aspects, it is as good as cash generation. And so the focus has been on unwind of profits. As far as solvency is concerned, we have ended this year with 188% solvency, and the 4% drop that you see in solvency from the 192% last year is nothing but investment in our subsidiary. So the cash is still there with us. It's just that it's not counted towards solvency, but it's still there with us, just sitting in the account. And so we're very cognizant of the kind of new business that we underwrite and what it does as far as solvency is concerned. So even if we were to grow robustly over the next 3 years, we would not have an issue with solvency or require fresh capital. Hope that addresses your questions.
Yeah, this is very, very clear. Thank you so much, madam.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Adarsh P. from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Just wanted to understand the 49-month persistency specifically. A couple of cohorts have seen like a material improvement. So if you can just talk about what's that related to and trend.
Yeah, so this is something that is, you know, I had alluded to every quarter in the last three quarters that saw a hit on a 61st month persistency. So really there was one particular cohort of policies that exiting our system, which is what had impacted our 61st month. So the 49th month is has a different cohort of policies wherein we took care that the way the product construct was, that people understood the product well, realized that they have to stay invested and it's in their interest to stay invested, and that started panning out very well. We also started back in time 4 years ago really hand-holding the 13-month persistency at that time, because if 13 months, as you know, starts off on a shaky ground, then there is only that much success that you have by the time it reaches 49th month. So really it was holding and hand-holding that cohort very, very carefully, and that's resulting in a better improved 49th month. On the 13th month, what is also a big lever is what is our success rate on SIECS tagging, because if the tagging is done, our experience, and again this is intuitive, but often we, you know, tend to overlook some of the basic aspects, is that although it might take a little bit more involved conversation with the customer at the time of sale, but it really moves the needle as far as persistency is concerned, and we are giving a lot of focus on getting the tagging right at the time of sale.
Perfect. And ma'am, the second question...
One other point that I wanted to make is that if you look at our Q4 persistency, even the 61st month persistency, it has moved quite meaningfully from 47% to 53% in Q4. Just wanted to point that out. Because on a full year basis, it looks 50 has gone to 51, but Q4 standalone has gone... and even the 13-month persistency on a standalone basis on Q4 has gone up from 82% to 84%.
Perfect. Ma'am, on the annuity business where you all have done so well this year, just wanted to understand, you know, some more granularity on, the number of policies sold. You know, obviously you've kind of broken down the channel mix, but which channels do you see like growing faster potential there? And lastly, I think like in most products, everybody is going to follow you in this product as well. And since it's return based, you know, guaranteed return kind of, you know, or a you know, annuity kind of product, it may end up competing on rates at some point. So how do you look at that aspect?
Yeah, so, you know, we are not afraid of competition, and time and again, exactly like you've said, when we open up a new segment or a new focus on offering, and this is going back in time, whether it is talking about our being the first mover in protection, online protection, or whether it is in credit protect or in deferred pension, all of that is now panning out. But really the fact of the matter is that the opportunity is so vast that even if, you know, all 24 companies are hugely focused on annuity, there will still be enough and more. And the demographics are just showing that people are living longer, and the danger of living longer is a lot worse than of dying prematurely. And that is even more acute when you read that think of that in conjunction with the outlook on inflation. So really it is, you know, there's a wide field out there. To your second point on whether there will be a rate cut, I think this is a dangerous game, especially on annuity. It's different if you play this game on term, that is also dangerous, but even more so on the annuity business. So good luck to those who want to play only the rate game on annuity.
And ma'am, I was asking a little bit more granularity on number of policies sold. You know, you've kind of given the channel mix, but yeah, numbers around that and which channels, you know, how it's been sold and, you know, some sense around distribution there. Yeah.
So we've sold, in this year, we've sold about 36,000 policies, and it's more than doubled from last year.
So ticket size, average ticket size is about 71,000 or so on EPI basis. 7 lakhs on single premium basis.
No, so we would also like to add that, look, on one side we also have our pension subsidiary, which is growing fairly rapidly and has a large market share, and that will be a feeder into our annuity business going down the line. So, you know, in the long term, we also believe that that will help us continue to grow our market share in annuity. And we've also said the market is very large, but, you know, the avenues in terms of reaching out to that market, we are building step by step.
Understood. No, perfect. Thanks a lot, ma'am.
Thank you. The next question is from Ravi Naredi from Naredi Investment.
Is premium 53% net profit?
Sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Naredi, but your voice is cutting. We can't really hear you very well.
One minute. Hello?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Ma'am, our premium increases 24% this year, while our net profit rises only 15%. So, how you can describe this situation?
If you have our investor presentation handy, you could just look at slide 8 and I'll explain in context of that.
Okay.
So, if you look at slide 8, you see the arrow of 33%. So, our back book, which is what is the generator of profits, has actually grown by 33%. So against the 24% that you mentioned, the back book has actually grown by 33%. It is a new business stream because Indian GAAP does not allow us to defer any of these expenses. Well, the premiums would be collected over the life of the policy, but the expenses are upfront, largely upfront, and that has to be booked as we incur it. And that is what is the strain that you see of 16.5 billion. And that is the reason why you see the discounting. This is very typical for an insurance company. In fact,
right.
Yeah, in fact, a company will show much higher levels of profit growth if you stop growing.
Okay. And then second thing, our investment grew more than that, but our income it grew only 5%. Any reason behind this? Our AUM is grown 18%, but our income is grown 5% only.
When you refer to income, which line item are you?
9027 crore in respect of 8594 crore, I have seen 5% rise.
Right. So this also includes the unrealized gain that you see is not sitting in here.
So the IRDA regulations doesn't allow you to take credit for any unrealized gains for the traditional products.
And have you described this unrealized gain, how much it is?
We can give you that number separately.
Okay.
If there in our financials, we'll just give that to you.
Okay. And last, ma'am, our operating expenses have risen 29% this year. Any specific reason?
Yeah, so our expenses are a function of a growth. Like I said, our back book has grown very well.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. All the best, and you are doing wonderful job.
Thank you so much, sir.
Welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from Abhishek Sharma from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Just two questions, ma'am. One, just wanted to understand on after this open architecture, so what percentage of HDFC Bank's insurance business would we now be accounting for? And where do you see this settling? So you think that there's still further scope of other partners taking away share from HDFC Bank's insurance pool as such? And also, if you can give me some more granularity, like what kind of products have been hit, or is it like across the board you have seen the impact of open architecture? And the second question is with regard to...
Can I just answer this first question?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so on as regards HDFC Bank, broadly on overall bank assurance, it's about 63-64%, and of which typically HDFC Bank is in the range of about 82-83% of our bank assurance. So that's a number on overall where we've ended up. Second aspect is to your question on which products did we lose market share for. See, the way we look at it is that the products that we sell need to be accretive to all three stakeholders. It's the partner, the customer, as well as us as the manufacturer. And we are very confident that the value accretive products and the products that we believe are completely new to the customer, like for example our Sanchay Plus is doing exceedingly well. We might vacate space on some products wherein we feel that it is not, it's taken too far and it doesn't make a lot of sense for us. And so it always has to be a balance, not just in the context of HDFC Bank, but with really any distributor. So we need to, so it needs to be a well thought through strategy in terms of what products that we launch and which segments do we go after. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, and I think we also need to look at our share in the context of a much faster growth overall for HDFC Bank. You know, I think they have been able to demonstrate that an open architecture has led to a much faster growth in terms of life insurance sale. So as they grow faster with this, we can look at the a better product mix, we can look at better value proposition for the customers, and we grow along with them overall. So that would be something that we look closely at.
Okay. But any number you can share is what would be your share in HDFC Bank's insurance pool?
So, you know, it tends to be dynamic almost on a day-to-day basis. Very difficult to say a particular number. And it's also very difficult to say. It's like, you know, open architecture, that it's not just with HDFC Bank, although there's a lot of discussion, but there are other partners also that we have wherein we have open architecture. Our Credit Protect business is quite a bit open architecture, and wherein the same partner has multiple insurance companies. We do believe that open architecture, and HDFC Bank has shown that as an example of overall growth and how much they can deepen insurance penetration, and that's really the way forward in our minds at least.
Okay.
One needs to have enough to be able to survive survive and thrive in an open architecture, and so there is no overhang on our company is what we would like to believe. That what if open architecture were to come? That question is really not an overhang.
But ma'am, if you see like in the last month of this quarter, basically the growth has been in single digit for several months. Of course, it is attributable somewhat to the higher base of last year. But in March specifically, growth was subdued in say single digit, and that time base effect has also started to wear off. So just...
March certainly had a very significant base impact. And also if you look at, not just the month of March, but if you look at the margins for quarter four, the margins have thrived and grown very well. So 25.6% margin. So we are again very selective. So if we had, for example, sold a lot of unit linked or sold a lot of low margin products in that quarter, mm-hmm. we might not have been having this question on why is growth fairly tepid. So we do say no to a lot of business which is relatively low in terms of us being able to write that business. So your question might have been very valid if, for example, a margin had also taken a beating in quarter four.
Fair enough, ma'am. One last question on persistency.
Yeah.
I just wanted to understand what is the persistency assumption that we are means the persistency assumption built into EV calculation, and how different it is from our actual experience. So, like one of your peers has a very a reasonable spread between the assumption and actual experience, and another peer is having like it's more trued up to last year. So what is it in your case?
See, persistency assumption varies quite a bit between different products and different durations, you know, first year, second year, and then also varies by channel in some products. So it varies quite a bit. But we have a fairly robust process in arriving at the assumption at the end of each year. We look at what the actual experience has been against the assumption, and if it is worse than the assumptions, we immediately take account of it in the very year where the experience is adverse. But if it is positive, we just look for 2-3 years of favorable experience to pan out before we put through any assumptions. So therefore, we have some level of cushion at any point of time between the assumptions we have and the actual experience. So that's broadly the process or framework in which we sort of change the assumptions every year. But it's always a positive variance that in the last 10 years or so, the persistency experience has been, variance has been positive, and assumptions have also been put through accordingly.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shreya Shivani from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, Vibha. Hi, this is Prakhar congratulations. It's been a good year with all the headwinds around. Good to see this. I just have one question. If I just put it in perspective, over the last 3 years, you've done fantastically on protection. And given where the margin profile is, I believe it will be correct to assume that the share of profits or VNB from protection business would have gone up, say, between fiscal 16 to 19 or whatever, 17 to 19. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes, absolutely.
So, Chef, Vibha, if that's true, then why, if I'm looking at, say, the sensitivity analysis over a three-year period or so, the sensitivity of, say, VNB to mortality risk has not increased? If you could explain me how that works.
Just give me a minute, I'll pull out the slide.
Sure. That's 23, so it's about 5%, both sides, and it's been in that range for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, so your question is that why isn't it becoming less sensitive to mortality risk?
It has to. No, I would say that it has to become more sensitive, right? If the the protection business contribution to VNB has increased, and even if I'm taking a lateral curve, would it not be a case that the sensitivity goes up? Maybe I'm getting it wrong, but if you could help me understand this.
A couple of reasons. One is that how we have our reinsurance strategy.
Okay.
Because what you see here is net of reinsurance.
Okay.
So as long as we are on the ball in identifying trends and then in advance reinsuring those cohorts, that that risk goes off our books. Second aspect is we do a lot of, through the use of a lot of analytics, we do look at which segments are not having good experience variance, and for us to stop writing business very quickly into those sub-segments or sub-cohorts. It could even be in a particular age group, it could be a particular gender, it could be a particular income class when we start seeing negative trends and we're very convinced that we're getting taken for a ride. So we would, and we are also very, very nuanced on which partner, what kind of rates that we are giving, which is my earlier point on a caller who said something about which segments in HDFC Bank. HDFC Bank is just an example, but it could be any distributor wherein there is, at a particular price point, we will walk away from writing term business.
Got it.
Experience is close to what you are expecting. You will not find an increase in sensitivity. So that's basically the key to this.
Okay. And just to get a broader sense, would there be a difference in the sensitivity to mortality between credit product and retail protection?
See, it is a function
broadly.
Of price. Because what we need to ensure is, it is a given that there will be differences because the level of underwriting is close to zero in a credit protect unless it's for very higher ticket sizes. But as long as how you price it takes care of that risk, or through the use of analytics, we know that this is the kind of mortality signature that is likely to pan out. We, in the last 2 quarters, we have repriced again on several of our credit protect relationships for exactly this reason, wherein the experience has been adverse, and we are quite prepared to stop writing that kind of business because it just doesn't make sense for us to do that.
Even on the individual side, we actually have a lag model where we look at score and the time of sourcing, where we are able to predict in terms of how the mortality behavior will be, and we have kind of worked on that.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you for explaining this. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harshit Toshniwal from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations on a great set of results. Despite all the headwinds, this was a really good year. I have a couple of questions. So, the data keeping one. So, on our agreement with Dena and Vijaya, so now since both of them have been merged with Bank of Baroda, any update on that part? That are we looking at the entire Bank of Baroda now as one of our partners?
No, we are no longer the manufacturer of for Dena and Vijaya.
Okay.
It goes down. I mean, down the line, if they do open it up for down the open architecture way, we would remain very interested, and we do believe we can add a lot of value. And clearly what we're trying to engage with, not just them, but with other public sector banks also, that what some of the private sector banks have done in terms of open architecture is really for them to harness the power of that, what they already have. And given that Dena Vijaya is now subsumed within Bank of Baroda, being the second largest public sector bank, there is a huge opportunity that we believe we can add to them if we are onboarded as a partner once again.
I also believe that in a very short time frame, we have been able to make an impact in terms of how we could deliver across a relationship like Vijaya Bank. And, you know, over a period of time, if open architecture does come up, and, you know, even the PSU banks may want to look at it given the huge opportunity. I think our past experience earlier with PSU banks, now that we have United Bank, and the, you know, kind of Vijaya Bank, what we could showcase, we do believe if they do go in for an RFP down the line, we would stand a very good chance of getting into the PSU space.
Yeah, and Harshit, to give you a data point, based on the run rate we had with Vijaya and Dena Bank, if we had continued along that trajectory, we would have paid them fee income of about 65 to 70% of what currently Bank of Baroda is earning. So, despite being a minute portion in terms of size versus Bank of Baroda.
Got it. And the second one is on more on the business mix going forward. So clearly, one trend which even Tucker mentioned, that over the period of last 3 to 4 years, we've clearly seen protection being one of the major drivers of the new business. And even though we focus too much on unit linked as a segment, and then how that mix, I mean, you have always guided it to be around 50 to 55%. Do you think that going forward, we are actually ready to bring that mix a bit more down naturally and increase the smaller ticket size products like protection or the other ones which are more high margin accretive? So maybe 5 years, 6 years down the line, do we really see unit link to be even a smaller portion than the current, or you still hold on to that 50-55% mix?
No, it should go down to sub 40% over the horizon that you mentioned, Harshit.
Okay, I
would just add that, look, we do see that there is a ULIP opportunity out there, but, you know, it's also different in terms of how we are able to grow. We've always believed in looking at a very balanced product mix, and that's what we've been able to demonstrate. So we are very clear in terms of how much of the ULIP we'll be able to source across which of the channels, and when and as required, we can always scale that up.
Also, one reason why I was asking this question is that despite the margins, when you look at ULIP versus protection, they are very different. But if I adjust the capital requirement of the two products, then on a return on embedded value or capital productivity basis, they don't look very different. At least that's what my sense is, given the kind of initial capital which we require. So from that context, in the last 3 to 4 years, we always had that excess solvency. But now when solvencies are nearing to the 160% levels over the next 3 to 4 years, do you still see that the margin is going to be your key criteria for determining the product mix?
See, first thing is strain or the capital requirement for UL is actually much higher. It's probably the highest amongst all the product categories. Okay.
Okay.
Because you are able to collect only 2-3% of the premium as charges in year one, and then whereas the initial expenses will be in excess of say 50% or so. Therefore, the strain in UL is much higher than protection or non-par or par products. So that the hypothesis is that we were incurring much higher strain, and by moving to non-par products, our strain will actually come down. The capital actually come down going forward if you move away from ULIPs.
Okay.
And also, UL cannot actually be replaced completely by protection products because the ticket sizes will be much smaller than UL. So we would probably be replacing UL by non-par products or, say, annuity products. That's more realistic. And, you know, those products don't have as much strain as, even a protection product. So we do expect that the return on capital, if instead of using NBM or NBC, if you want to start looking at ROCs, but we believe that the non-par products will fare better than the current UL products on ROC basis.
Okay. Okay. And if I may add one question, if it's possible, then on the annuity part, so as you said that we have done 36,000 of policies, is majority of them customers which we are sourcing separately through agents whom we do not have any relationship on the pension part, or majority of them are coming from the pensioners who are maturing over a period of time?
See, there are two, three buckets through which we get the pensions business. One is, like you said, the vesting base of the current pension policies, plus the walk-in customers of HDFC Bank, and from the NPS relationship from HDFC pension company we have. So these are the three broad sources of our pension business. And yes, the mixes have changed over a period of time, and we expect that it will continue to change as our new pension subsidiary ramps up further.
We also have relationships with group clients, and even through them, we would be able to garner some of the annuity business.
I would also like to add that our agency business has been fairly active in the annuity business, and through their customer base, they've been able to ramp it up.
Yeah.
What we are happy is that this addresses an entirely new segment of people above the age of 58.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mayank Fukrediwala from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, Vibha.
Hi, man.
I had the sort of question on the HDFC Bank channel. Now, it seems the volumes over this year has declined for us on the HDFC Bank channel. So, would that have an impact on that particular channel's margin for us? And if yes, if we see growth come back on HDFC Bank channel with the stabilization of share over there, would there be some recovery in the margins as well?
Yes, absolutely. And especially when you look at the channel-wise product mix that we have given on slide 15, if you can just refer to that, that becomes very, very evident because, I mean, we've put out here Banca, but you can extrapolate this to HDFC Bank as well. You see unit-linked at 67%. And so when growth comes back over here, the operating leverage should also start kicking in. And as we tweak the unit percentage, the margins also should start climbing up.
So could you give us a sense as to what has been the margin impact because of lower volumes on the HDFC Bank channel?
So all of that is subsumed in our margin walk, wherein you see in terms of the impact of higher APE, it's subsumed in that.
Slide
22.
Is it that part of that COA at the end?
Yeah.
The 0.9.
COA impact is largely because of volume linked and the operating leverage that I said. That part should go away if growth came back to just the level that we were last year.
Right. And this year you've indicated we are 82% of Banca as HDFC Bank. Do you have the number of what it was in FY18?
So it was a slightly higher number. So close to 90, high 80s.
High 80s, yeah. Understood. Just one more data-related question. So the online is a subset of direct, right? So could you give us a sense as to how large is online as a proportion of the total direct?
Yeah, so online is about 9%.
Okay, understood.
Yeah. So online is 9 and about direct is about 11%.
Understood.
Yeah, 50-50.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. That's very helpful.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Venkatesh Sanjeevi from Pictet Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, Vibha and team.
Hi.
Just one question on the reinsurance subsidiary. Can you just talk a bit about it? What are the plans there? How do you build capabilities? How much capital would you commit here? And going forward, are the other geographies that you're considering here?
So, you know, we started this subsidy a few years back. We have been, the whole model is to look at tie up with one of the, or some of the few local seeding insurers and reinsure. So in UAE, for instance, we have tied up with Orient and, you know, and a few other players. So similarly in Bahrain, we have tied up with Al Alia Solidarity now and with a few other players, and now we are looking at in terms of Jordan and Egypt. We do believe that the opportunity out there is to also look at how we can work with these partners to, kind of target the NRI base in each of these markets, especially in UAE, We also believe that there is a opportunity to look at reinsurance across medical group as well as create individual products. So we have been looking at scaling this up in a very systematic manner. We would like to understand the market in more detail and then probably look at how we would want to operate in each of these markets.
So you've invested about 115 crores in this business last year and that has taken some bit of strain on your solvency. So going forward, is there a limit or is there a budget of how much you would be looking to deploy?
So just to explain that this actually, you know, to operate in some of these markets as a reinsurer, you needed to be rated. So, you know, the capital infusion that we did in this particular subsidiary is actually lying with us as part of our capital there. It's not really been fully deployed. And but it, what it has done is it has given us a BBB rating, which by itself is a huge achievement for the subsidiary. And then because of that, we will now be able to participate as partner because a lot of the leading seeding insurers would want to see this rating before, you know, they tie up with us and allows us to do business in that in many markets.
Right. So do you have an estimate of next 3 years how much capital you would further require?
Right now, there are no capital infusion plans. We'll see how it goes, but nothing on the horizon right now.
Right. Okay, that's helpful. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to inform participants. Please limit your questions to one per participant. The next question is from the line of HR Gala from Finvest Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Viva. Congrats for a very great set of numbers.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any progress on any inorganic initiative?
So we remain enthused. We have looked at a lot of deals in the past 5-6 years, but nothing has fructified, as you know. We remain enthused. It has to be a value proposition for us wherein it's a combination of a good quality back book as well as good distribution tie-up and quality of management. So we have the currency and we are enthused, but nothing right now on the cards.
Thank you. The next question is from Avinash Singh from SBI Cap Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Going at, to slide 8, in terms of your, again, the new business trend, I mean, if I look at the trend, I mean, the past trend has been broadly in line to AP growth. I'm mindful of the fact that, okay, of course, once the AP mix change across different product categories, the trend will be totally different. But now, if I look from FY18 to 19, it's almost like more than 50% jump on new business strain, where the growth has slowed down, and in particularly the unit linked, as you were just explaining, that sort of had a higher new business strain, has also slowed down. So what explains all of a sudden this disconnect between your APE growth and the sort of a changes to the new business strain? Because this is disproportionately higher strain, despite the fact that ULIP has gone down.
So two or three reasons, and Avinash, you're right, but this is part of the business model. Except for the slow growth, slow top-line growth that I mentioned on the earlier call and which is outlined on slide 23 on the COA impact. But leaving that aside, two or three things. One is that our particular focus on credit protect business, our focus on non-PAR business, as well as the slowdown that I mentioned. Also in quarter two, towards the end of quarter one and quarter two, we sold a little bit more unit link than we would have liked. Which is something that we will be driving as a strategy in this year in FY20 to further curtail unit link, will mean that this train should as a percentage come off. But what I can assure you is that except that slowdown as a result of HDFC Bank that we talked about, leaving that aside, all of it, all the strain that you see here is very accretive on new business margins, and as a result of which, we have ended with a 24.6% NBM. Also, our expense ratio itself has come off about 20 bps, yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from Manish Shukla from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Good evening and thank you for the opportunity. In your opening remarks, you mentioned the mix of credit life across product segments. If you don't mind, can you please repeat that and give the same number for fiscal 18 as well?
fiscal 18, Manish, we'll have to we'll circle back with you separately. What I had mentioned is that HDFC Group, all of it put together, this is HDFC Limited, HDFC Bank, HDFC Securities and HDB, everything put together is 28%, and no single partnership contributing more than 10%. So some of the major relationships, none of them contribute more than 10%. So we're talking about a Chola, a Bajaj Finance, etc. And so what we're very happy is that the diversified lines of business, so a housing and LAP contributing 37%, microfinance contributing 29%, and other lines of business is the balance, which is again formed of personal lending, vehicle and tractor finance.
Thank you. The next question is from Rishabh Parikh from Sunidhi Investment. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Vibha, congratulations on a good set of numbers. Just one quick question. Assuming HDFC Bank has now settled down at a steady state level, our share in HDFC Bank, what kind of APE growth can we expect in the near term, the next year and the year after that?
So we've always said smooth upward curve, and past history shows that about 2 to 2.5x GDP, so in the range of about 17 to 20% is the kind of growth that we have been tracking in the past, and we remain reasonably confident of getting to that kind of a number. This is on the individual AP. Anyway, total AP, we are that should not be a problem at all.
And just one quick question. Do you see your share in HDFC Bank stabilizing over the last one quarter?
Yes.
Or has it been declining month on month, January, February, March as well?
So, and now we are also into April. So generally it has stabilized.
It has stabilized. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Neeraj Toshniwal from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Would it be possible to get a pre-overrun VNB margin? I mean, because the strain has increased so much and I don't see the mix of VIF to ANV changing much. I mean, that's kind of stable. So, anything we can make out of that or...
you know, we have long stopped reporting pre-overrun because we have always believed that the only version of truth is post-overrun. And we also have this, even for every quarter, we mark it to whatever is the actual expenses. Not, we don't even straight line it for the year. So pre-overrun can pretty much be anything, right? So it doesn't, we've stopped tracking that number at all.
So pre-overrun is based on an assumption of for expenses, and you know anybody can come up with any expense to boost their pre-overrun margin and you know show a great growth in profitability. So therefore the best number to look at is post-overrun margin, and therefore we stopped it like a few years back.
Okay. Got your point. Thank you. And one more question, if I may ask, is on your annuity business. Can you get some more sense on how we are going ahead and where it's getting? I mean, how much portion of the, as a percentage, we're going ahead? Some strategy. What is the mix we are looking at in some after say 2 to 3 years?
So we've written around 2,500 crores of annuity this year. It has grown from the previous year of 1,000 crores. So we are hoping to continue a similar kind of a growth in the future as well.